the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Late last month, Malaysia's Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad issued a directive to state officials: raise the minimum age for marriage to 18 years old. The move came after a huge public outcry earlier this year after a 41-year-old Malay man married an 11-year-old Thai girl named Ayu. Now, the man, Che Abdul Karim Che Abdul Hamid, was a successful rubber trader. Ayu, who became his third wife, was the daughter of an employee who worked for a family business. Now, this case has highlighted the issue of child marriage in Southeast Asia, a part of the world where modernization and rapid economic development has sometimes coexisted uneasily with traditional religious and cultural practices. That includes child marriage, which is defined as a union where at least one of the spouses is under 18. Now, in most all cases where an adult marries someone under 18, the child is a girl. To be sure, child marriages take place all over the world. That includes the U.S., where at least 9,000 people under 18 were married in 2010, according to research by the PBS news program Frontline. But in parts of Southeast Asia, the practice is far more widespread and is the subject of growing scrutiny. So on this edition of Global Journalist, a look at child marriage in Southeast Asia, we've got a great group of guests. But to kick things off, we're going to hear about the issue in Vietnam. For that, we're going to bring in Yen Duong. She's a journalist who wrote a lengthy article earlier this year for the South China Morning Post about Vietnamese girls being trafficked to China to be sold as brides. She's on assignment in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, where she joins us now. Yen, welcome.
Hello.
Well, you wrote about the trafficking of girls and women from northern Vietnam to China, where they are sold as brides to Chinese men. How does this system operate?
The Vietnam is actually a major source for cross-border human trafficking. And especially in northern provinces in Vietnam, like a lot of young women are trafficked to China to become child brides or to work in brothels or to work as laborers. So this happens mainly to ethnic minorities. And that's why I came to Sapa earlier this year to write about this article.
Sapa,
actually,
this is a region in northern Vietnam.
Yeah, Sapa is very popular among tourists to Vietnam, actually. But it's also home to some of the biggest ethnic minorities in Vietnam, including the Hmong. So the practice of trafficking, like the traffic of women and also children to China, are very particularly popular in Sapa, actually, and also in Lao Cai province, where it's located.
And I understand one of the issues that drives this practice is the fact that China has something like 34 million more men than women. So there's this huge demand for brides, basically, from other countries.
Yeah, exactly. So not just in Vietnam, but also in Laos and Cambodia, there are a lot of young women and girls were trafficked to China to marry Chinese men. In Vietnam in particular, like not just in the north, but also in central or even the southern areas, a lot of young girls are trafficked to China to become brides. And a lot of these girls are under the age of 18. So many of them have to get married with men double their age.
And as I understand it, there's actually websites where these girls essentially are advertised for sale as child brides.
Yeah, apparently it's very common. And so not in particularly to China, a lot of men buy this from brokers and it was by the girls from brokers. And it was very common, actually. It was also very difficult to crack down this phenomenon, even though it's, of course, it's illegal, and the police in both China and Vietnam really try hard to stop this.
Well, one of the
human trafficking.
Well, one of the people you write about was a girl named Tien, who was 16 years old. She left her home in central Vietnam, told her family she was going to spend the night at a cousin's house. What happened to her?
First, for a head up, Tien is not her real name, so her name has been changed to protect her identity. So I met her in Hanoi via an organization called Haga International. So Haga helped support women and young girls who have been trafficked to, so they introduced me to Tien, and she was kidnapped to China when she was only 16 years old by her own cousin, so someone she knows really well. So at this time, Tien wasn't going to school. She left school. Her family is quite broken, so there was no one looking out for her. And she trusted her cousin and just staying at her house one day when she was being transported to China. So apparently, like the cousin that she trusted drugged her. So she was, of course, unconscious when she was transported to China. After she was brought to China, she was sold several times. And at the beginning, she refused to go to the family she was married to. She was staying at her broker. But after that, after being pressured, she had to leave, and she got married with a Chinese man. And then one day she escaped herself, actually, back to Vietnam.
Okay. And so I understand now, so she was kidnapped when she was 16. Today she's something like 21. 22.
Yeah.
How is life for her now back in Vietnam? I mean, my understanding is that many of these girls actually who are transported to China never return for various reasons.
Yeah. So according to the official statistics from the Vietnamese police, there are around more than around 6,000 victims who have been trafficked to China from 2012 to 2017, and only around 600 of them were able to actually escape. And one of the problems is that a lot of women actually don't want to come back because of the social stigma that they have been married off to become other people's wife, and then also to work in some cases in brothels. So, I mean, a lot of these women come from rural areas, come from ethnic minorities where there's major discrimination against women who have been trafficked before. So actually in a lot of cases where I talked to, they told me that a lot of women they know have families in China and they just decided to stay there. So Tien is quite an exceptional case because she was able to escape and she was able to brought back to Vietnam by the Chinese police. And luckily, because of the NGO that she's now being supported, Haga International. So she's actually in Hanoi right now, where she's working in a cafe and she goes to university. And she has been recovered a lot because she suffered from major psychological trauma, which is also an issue that has not really addressed in Vietnam, actually.
Well, Yen Duong, we're out of time, but I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
This is Global Journalist. On today's program, we're talking about child marriage in Southeast Asia. We just spoke with the journalist Yen Duong about the trafficking of Vietnamese children to China to be sold as brides. Up next, we're going to shift to Malaysia, a country where this issue of child marriage has been hotly debated. That's in part because for decades, marriage law for the country's Muslim majority has been subject to Sharia law and religious authorities rather than the government. For more on this, we're going to bring in Sharina Sharif in Selangor, Malaysia, near the capital Kuala Lumpur. She's the advocacy manager for a women's rights group called Sisters in Islam. Sharina, welcome.
Hello, Jason. Thank you for having us.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. We heard earlier in the program the story of this 11-year-old girl, Ayu, who was married to a 41-year-old man in Malaysia that caused such an uproar there. And as I mentioned, one of the issues in Malaysia has been that there are two sets of marriage law. The government is responsible for marriage for some part of the population, but not for others. Talk to us just a little bit about how that affects things.
Yeah, the laws in Malaysia are different depending on whether you are Muslim or not. So for non-Muslims, they are governed under the federal laws, which are, table created and passed in parliament. And for Muslims, they are governed under the Sharia legal system. And the Sharia legal system is state-based. So it is the state legislature that makes and passes the laws. And at the level of the states, the head of the religion are the sultans of the state. So it's a different it's a different manner in which legislation is approved in these different cases. So in the case of a non-Muslim, there is a minimum age of 18, but between the ages of 16 to 18, they can seek approval from the chief minister of the state if they need to be married, in that age, between 16 and 18. But under Sharia law, the age of marriage for boys is 18 and for girls it's 16. But there is a proviso that states that with the approval of the Sharia courts, there isn't a minimum age effectively.
So with approval, then somebody younger than 16 can be married. Then in Ayu's case, she was just 11, being married to a 41-year-old. So how do these Sharia courts, how do they justify, someone who's clearly a child being married to a 41-year-old man?
Yeah, I think that's the issue. And that's the reason why we have been very aggressive in calling out for law reform, because we don't feel that the court provides the necessary justification and good reasons. There isn't really a good reason for a child to be married in a country where the children can be provided education, health, etc. Their opportunities are so many, and marriage is just something.
Is there anything in the Quran that would justify this?
The conservative ulama in the country will talk about the age of marriage of the Prophet's second wife, Aisha. She was supposedly 9 years old. But I think from our point of view, the situation has changed. The communities have changed. In those days, women were chattel, and they were. It was quite normal for women to be married at a very early age, and the situation is completely different now. And there is no reason why we should allow child marriage in our country at this point in time.
Well, tell us more about Ayu's story. What has happened to her, and what happened? What happened to the man who married her? I understand that she became his third wife, so he already had two wives, and so she was the third.
Yeah, well, as I said, the legislation is based on the state. The state of Kelantan has not changed its legislation in the area of child marriage. And so their marriage remains legal. She is supposed to be in Thailand. We hear contradictory news. Sometimes we hear that she is, in the village where he is as well. I think we also hear reports that she is under care of social services in Thailand. So we're not 100% sure in that sense, because also I think the social services in our government is not very forthcoming with information with regards to this child.
Well, as I mentioned, the Prime Minister of Malaysia issued a directive to the state authorities to set the minimum age for marriage at 18. That was just a couple weeks ago. Now, has anything actually changed as a result of that?
Yeah, that's been a very positive development. We had our Deputy Prime Minister, who was also the Minister for Women's Affairs and Children's Affairs, and she had stated previously that the government did not have any power to do anything about it because it was state-based. But so we're very happy that the Prime Minister himself has come out to issue this directive. But this directive doesn't necessarily mean an automatic change of law. Every state will need to go through its, own legislature to change the laws. And there are some countries, states in Malaysia, especially on the east coast of the peninsula Malaysia, which have very conservative Islamic approach. And so I think the challenge is more with these states that, will not want to change the legislation because they feel that this is part of Islamic culture and Islamic practice and, should be allowed under the laws.
And Sharina, our time grows short, but what do we know about the scope of the issue in Malaysia? Do we know how many girls are getting married before 18 or before 15?
Yeah, the data is not very regular and not consistently laid out. We have the last data provided by the Deputy Minister of Women, and she mentioned about 15,000 children under the age of children who are married. And this was between 2007 and 2017. About 10,000 were Muslims and 5,000 were non-Muslims. That's the most recent that we have.
Well, Sharina Sharif, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
A reminder that if you're interested in more Global Journalists, check us out online at globaljournalist.org. There you can find our archives and additional coverage of underreported international news and human rights issues. To broaden our discussion now, we're going to bring in two other guests who have been tracking this issue closely. Joining us from Bangkok, Thailand, is Grace Agkawili. She's a child protection specialist with the regional office of the UN Children's Fund, or UNICEF. Grace, welcome.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for inviting us.
Sure. Also with us from Strasbourg, France, is Maud Debour-Boukekio. She is the UN's special rapporteur on the sale and sexual exploitation of children. Maud, welcome.
Hello, Jason. How are you?
Great. Well, thanks again for joining us. Talk to us, if you would, Maud, just to pick up on Malaysia for a moment. I understand you had been there recently and advocated, spoken with the government about this issue, particularly after this high-profile case. What did you see there? What did you say to the government?
Well, as you indeed, I was in Malaysia in the beginning of September, and the purpose of my visit was not exclusively the issue of child marriage, but I focused on that issue very much so, because I consider that child marriage is a serious breach of almost all children's rights, whether it's the right to education, right to life, security, to health. It impacts the child in every sense and is very prejudicial. So I talked to the authorities as well as religious authorities. And my message was a very strong one, which was that there should be a complete review and rehaul of all the legislation so that no child under 18 would be married at all. So no exceptions and no justifications in under any circumstances. So that was my message when I did my debriefing with the government, I just hope that what we just heard, that there is really now a positive tendency to go for this major change will really happen, and that involves clearly the goodwill of the religious authorities and the judges in the Sharia courts.
Well, Maud, if I could stop you there, because you touch on a point that I want to pick up on with Grace Agkawili, actually, because when we read about child marriage, or when we talk about it, it's defined as a marriage where one partner is under 18. But it seems like there are some cases that are more problematic than others. You know, if you have two 17-year-olds who want to get married and maybe there's a pregnancy, that seems quite a difference. That seems quite different from the story of 11-year-old Ayu being married to a 41-year-old man, or to girls in Vietnam being kidnapped and transported to China for sale, essentially. So, I mean, how are we to think about this issue?
So, Jason, that's right. Actually, UNFPA and UNICEF did a research recently, basically to try to understand the patterns and relationships of child marriage, adolescent pregnancy, and early union in our region, which is Southeast Asia. And we found that there are a variety of reasons and circumstances why they enter into early marriage or union, one of which is the traditional child marriage, as the case of Malaysia that was explained to us by Sharina. There have been cases also of what we call circumstantial marriage, where to counter the social stigma associated with premarital sex and having a baby out of wedlock, children are forced to enter into these types of marriages.
So, Grace, it sounds like in the first case, then, you know, when we talk about the issue in Malaysia with Ayu, she came from a poor family. She was married to a wealthier 41-year-old man, even though she was 11. So there was sort of an economic incentive for her family. Then you're talking about this issue in the U.S. They're sort of colloquially called shotgun marriages, where there's a pregnancy and then there's sort of a social pressure on a young couple to get married. But then you were going to add that there's a, sort of an additional category as well.
That's right. I mean, that's why it's very hard to just pinpoint one reason why child marriages are occurring in the region. So one could be the virtue of by virtue of cultural norms and traditions. Other types of marriages may include trafficking, where girls are sold or otherwise forcibly married due to poverty and violence. The point of the research that we did in trying to understand these diverse patterns is that many of these reasons overlap, and we encourage policymakers to make sure that we understand the drivers of these early unions, as well as link it with other issues such as adolescent pregnancy, because we have seen cases where young children are pregnant and the society pressures them to get into marriage. On the other hand, there are also cases where it's really traditional forms of marriage. So that's why in understanding these drivers in a diverse region, we have to have different set of interventions. And the law is one thing, and it's good that some countries already, and we encourage countries to increase the age of marriage, but we know that many of these countries also have exception to these rules, depending on the community that they belong to. And that law alone is, I'm sure the other panelists will agree, that law alone, legal reform alone, will not be enough in ensuring that child marriage is a history in our region. So again, the point of our research, again, is to make sure that we understand the different drivers of why this early union occur or child marriage and its link with adolescent pregnancy in the region.
Well, Grace, you raised an issue there around trafficking. And there is, you know, we talked about this issue of trafficking of particularly girls from Laos and Vietnam into China. But Maud DeBoer, if I could turn this to you, I understand that some of the most vulnerable people in the region are the Rohingya, the Muslim minority that has been forced out of Myanmar and are living in refugee camps in Bangladesh and elsewhere. I understand that there's also sort of a widespread problem of child marriage and human trafficking for them as well. Tell us what's happening.
Definitely, the problem of the Rohingya refugees who arrive in Malaysia is really a very serious one, and one should look at the itinerary, for instance, for these young girls, many of whom are trafficked out of Myanmar, who go through accompanied or not by traffickers, who walk bare feet through the forest, and eventually arrive in a place somewhere in Thailand where they are being isolated, detained, and then trafficked on to the border area with Malaysia, where again they are detained in places which are wholly inadequate for children, already totally traumatized. And at that point, they are very often brought across the border and then virtually sold to young or less young men who are seeking a bride. And in fact, so these girls ranging age between 12 to 15, 16 years, they're sold to Malaysian men, impregnated, are pregnant, and just have to go on, live their life in these circumstances. And actually, they feel that's the only way of survival, because these husbands pay for the debts they have incurred during their trafficking journey.
And it sounds like they're living in very difficult circumstances in refugee camps or back in Myanmar. And so this must look like a better way, or a way out, at least.
I've met two of these young girls. One was 15 years old, who was already expecting her second baby. Such a young body, totally not ready to carry a child, and certainly psychologically very difficult for her to cope with a situation like that. But again, this is all about exploitation. The money goes in the pockets of the traffickers, and they couldn't give care less whether these children are sold or exploited, because in many of these cases also these marriages don't last, and if they don't last, these children are being sent sent back into the street, picked up by pimps and end up in brothels. So the situation for these children who are also as lacking the identity documents, which is also a major problem, is very serious. They have no access to education. The educational system in Malaysia is such that there's a clear discrimination between Malaysian-born children and non-Malaysian. And so for these children without proper ideas, there is very little hope for the future, because of lack of education, because of lack of social security, and patent discrimination, which is prevailing.
Well, Ma, that certainly sounds like a very grim situation. But Grace, I think there's another part of the region that is worth talking about, and that is Laos. Because I understand that in Laos, nearly 1 in 10 girls are married by age 15, and more than 1 in 3 are married by 18. So what do we know about why rates are so high in that country?
That's correct, Jason. Laos figures as 35% of women 20 to 24 years old were married before the age of 18. And they also figured out as the highest in terms of adolescent pregnancy, which is 94% of their young children. We know that Laos is, of course, composed of very rural and poor communities. That's why we are saying it could be due to poverty in Laos, in rural communities where access to information for young people are limited, where education and other services for young people are also lacking. But if you can see the data for both adolescent pregnancy and child marriage in Laos, the country figures the highest and so extremely high that we attribute it. It could also be not just to lack of services, but again, paying attention also to the lack of access to reproductive, age-appropriate, comprehensive sexual education in many parts of our region. Well, on the other aspect of other factors.
I'll give the last word to you what are the long-term impacts on people who marry very early at 15, 16?
Well, it's clearly, apart from the health implications, which are sometimes can be very serious, the psychological impact and the fact of that there is no, that education is being interrupted, that these young women have no opportunity to learn, to acquire life skills, to earn their own lives, will obviously have long-lasting impact. They are totally dependent on being supported by the man who has chosen to marry her. But if he gives up, and if she cannot return to her family, where does she go? Well, so it's really a very dangerous thing.
Well, we're out of time for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the Missouri School of Journalism and KBIA Mid-Missouri Public Radio. Many thanks to Yan Duong, Sharina Sharif, Grace Adkawili, and Ma Debour Bukikyu. Our assistant producers this week are Elliot Bauman and Shirley Tay. Yanchi Shu is our supervising producer. Aaron Hay is audio engineer. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for tuning in.